Court of Appeals in and for the Seventh Judicial Circuit. Hear me, hear me, hear me. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is Allstate Insurance versus Kika. Mr. Gendy, is it? Gendy.
Good morning. If it pleases the court, my name is James Gendy. I'm here on behalf of the appellants, Donna Kecca, Tricia Bontempo, individually as guardian of Miranda Bontempo. Your Honor, this case comes before you on an appeal from the district court in Wisconsin, the Honorable Judge Randa, involved an auto accident case where my clients were struck by an intoxicated driver. They were in the Bontempo vehicle. It is a grandmother, a daughter, and a granddaughter. They all lived in the same household, and they were all insured by Allstate under two separate policies. Initially, I would note that the Bontempo policy was indicated as primary, and the Kecca policy was indicated as excess coverage.
I think the Wisconsin Supreme Court has sort of put the brakes on these expansive readings of these underinsured motorist clauses.
I believe Your Honor is referring to the Folkman v. Kwame decision, and they have taken a step back from the crystal clarity standard that was set forth in Badger Mutual v. Schmitz. However, it appears that the Wisconsin appellate courts have certainly interpreted Folkman as a case where crystal clarity is no longer the standard, and admittedly, expansive interpretations of a reducing clause or the inability to have the reducing clause enforceable is something that the Wisconsin appellate courts are in a bit of a quandary over right now.
How is this clause here any different than? I mean, all of these things are pretty complex. They're hard to read. We all sort of agree with that, but the court seems to have taken a step back and said,
Your Honor, again, I
look for ambiguity.
I agree. The court is instructing insureds and their attorneys not to ferret through a policy to try and develop ambiguity. But what sets this case apart from the other cases that the court has been asked to review in Wisconsin is that this case involves an if there is other insurance clause, which comes after the underinsured motorist broad grant of coverage, comes after the limits of liability, saying that Allstate will pay up to the maximum amount, comes after the reducing clause, which indicates that any sources that are paid from other responsible parties, we have Allstate has an entitlement to reduce their language. Then you have the if there's other insurance that directly and specifically identifies the situation that we have here today. It's a primary excess coverage policy. And I would direct the court's attention to appellant's appendix at 142, where Allstate tells its insured in a primary excess situation that we will pay up to your policy limits only after all other collectible insurance has been exhausted. And that is the exact situation that we have here. All other collectible insurance has been exhausted. The liability carrier has paid in full. The Bontempo policy is the primary policy for underinsured motorist coverage has been paid in full. That puts us into the Kecca policy, that is the excess policy, and you have a specific clause of the underinsured motorist provision that identifies how Allstate is supposed to act under these circumstances. Now, admittedly, that has not been an argument that was well developed in the briefs. And as I've gone through all these cases and I've read these briefs numerous times, what struck me was this argument that was just tapping away And I've noted the if there's other insurance clause on numerous occasions in my brief. And Judge Randa even noted the if there's other insurance clause when he made his decision in September of last year. Allstate has devoted all of two sentences in its entire brief and notices of supplemental authority to the if there is other insurance clause. And I would ask the court to look at that if there is other insurance clause, because the language in there is very specific. It says once all other collectible policies have been exhausted, we will pay up your limit. And that comes after the reducing clause. And it comes at the very end of the underinsured motorist endorsement. So if Allstate wanted the reducing clause to apply to this if there is other insurance clause, then to logically place it, they should have put it after the if there is other insurance clause, as they put it after their limits of liability clause. So at least as far as the CECA policy is concerned, where it's an excess policy, you have specific language in the insurance contract that says exactly how Allstate is going to respond in that situation. It's not a broad grant.
Is this reducing clause language structured differently in this policy than in the some of the other policies that the Courts of Appeals now have construed in light of that Forfeit case?
Judge, I think it's important to note that we do not dispute that this reducing clause is in compliance with the Wisconsin underinsured motorist statute. And I would say, for all intents and purposes, it is very similar to the other reducing clauses that have been addressed in Badger, that have been addressed in Commercial v. Vorbeck, that have been addressed in Hansen, and the multiple other cases that have come down since Badger Mutual was decided.
I mean, we're sitting in diversity here, so we have to sort of predict how the Wisconsin Supreme Court would look at this policy.
And I agree.
I know you didn't choose this forum.
That's correct, Your Honor. But we are in this forum, and I believe that when you look at the policy, the reducing clause in every case that has been cited to you and addressed in the Wisconsin courts has not had any application to an if there's other insurance clause that we have at issue today. And I think that takes me full circle to the court's initial question, what sets this case apart from the other cases that we've seen from the Wisconsin Supreme Court and the Wisconsin Appellate Court. There's nothing in the if there's other insurance clause that directs the reasonable insured back to the reducing clause and to say that we are going to pay less than our policy limit. I believe the Wisconsin Supreme Court has also said in Badger Mutual and also in Folkman that courts cannot ignore ambiguities in a policy. Now, the ambiguity may not reach the level of requiring one clause not being enforced in context of the policy as a whole, but I submit to Your Honor that we have no ambiguity whatsoever relative to the if there is other insurance clause. That is as clear as a bell, and it's directly on point, and it doesn't have to do with the broad grant of underinsured motorist coverage. So specifically how that applies to our policy, under the CECA policy, it was a 100 per person, 300 per person, I'm sorry, 100 per person, 300 per occurrence limit. Allstate has tendered the 200,000 out of those limits. They have reduced by the payments from the liability carrier of $50,000, and they have reduced by the payments under the primary underinsured motorist coverage by $50,000. Based on their unambiguous if there's other insurance clause, they have no right to do that, and they've never instructed the insured that they intended to do that. I believe a reasonable insured, when reading the unambiguous language, we will pay up to your policy limit only after all other collectible insurance has been exhausted, would certainly believe that they're entitled to the amount of money that's been listed in the declaration page and for which they believe they are paying premiums for. I would also note that under Folkman v. Kwame, that was a little bit different situation where the Supreme Court was addressing a liability insurance provision in which the plaintiffs were attempting to essentially stack those policies. And it appears that I am into
your rebuttal time.
My rebuttal time.
Let me just ask you one question.
Yes, sir.
Is Dow Hauer your strongest analogous case?
I would say Dow Hauer is not my strongest analogous case in the general terms of it, but as far as the Court of Appeals decisions go, I would say yes, it is. We believe our Allstate's policy is most analogous to Dow Hauer. That is true.
Okay. Well, you want to save some time?
I do. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Of course. Ms. Arrowood.
May it please the Court, my name is Vicki Arrowood, and I represent the plaintiff, Appley Cross Appellant, Allstate Insurance Company. I'd like to begin my comments today just by responding to some of the issues that Mr. Gendy brought up when he was arguing. Begin with Mr. Gendy stated that he believes that the Wisconsin courts are in a quandary in terms of dealing with underinsured motorist reducing clauses. And I think that that is not correct. I think what we have is a standard that has now been established by the Wisconsin Supreme Court in the Folkman versus Kwame case. And what you are seeing now is the Court of Appeals are going back and reconsidering some of the cases that were previously vacated, applying this standard, and now issuing its decision based upon the standard that was set forth in the Folkman versus Kwame case. So I don't think we have a quandary here. We have a standard that the courts have now been asked to go back and apply, and that's what they are in fact doing.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that you don't. It doesn't mean that you don't look at each policy individually. And this policy here, Allstate, looks to me a lot more complex than this American Family policy and subject of application.
Actually, Your Honor, it is not more complex. What we have in this case is an Allstate insurance policy, which on the declarations page lists out the fact that both the Bontempos and the Keckas had purchased UIM coverage. And it lists out the levels of those coverages.
But is it your position that this policy is not more complex than that American Family policy?
Yes, it would be my position that it is. It is a longer policy.
Yeah, it's a lot longer, for one thing.
But I believe it's the Vorbeck case, they dealt with an insurance policy. The policy itself was 37 pages. The endorsement was another 7 pages. That's roughly equivalent to what the Allstate policy is, and the court in Vorbeck had no problem with the length of the policy. What the court focused on is, as you are going through the policies, does the policy start throwing up roadblocks, or does it start giving information to the insured which is either confusing, misleading, or leads the insured to a portion of the policy that is totally irrelevant? And this case is not like the Badger Mutual or the Dow Hauer policies for a number of reasons. First, as I stated, it clearly states in the declarations page that these people did purchase UIM coverage and the limits of those coverages. The declarations page also lists out all of the endorsements, which is the policy states are made a part of the policy. So the insured is on notice that there are endorsements that are attached to this policy. It is true that the table of contents and the index does not contain any reference to UIM coverage. But that has not been found by the court to create any type of an ambiguity, because it is not uncommon in these cases for insured to purchase UIM coverage, which is added to the policy as an endorsement. So then once you get through the policy, then they look at the endorsement. And what Allstate has here is this single standalone endorsement, which contains all of the UIM language. The insurer does not have to flip around and look at the policy at all. The UIM provisions are all together. And that was one of the big things that they talked about in the Badger Mutual case, was the insured got conflicting signals as the insured paged through the policy because there was different information. One part of it said it appeared that they would pay the entire policy limit. Then a different section of the policy said, no, wait a minute, we have a reducing clause. So the court said, listen, if you pay through this, it's very difficult for the insured to figure out what is going on.
Well, that's all fiction anyhow. The insureds don't look and read these policies. You know that. We know that.
Doesn't commercial union contain a warning, though, to look at the endorsement?
I believe commercial union does.
Yeah,
but the Allstate policy does say on the declarations page, this policy consists of the declarations page, the policy, and the endorsements, which are also made a part of the policy. So when you get this, you know that the endorsements are considered to be a part of the policy. The other thing is the reducing clause language, as Mr. Gandy stated in Allstate's policy, is not ambiguous. It is the language that has been mandated or sanctioned by the Wisconsin statute. One of the issues that Mr. Gandy brought up is this other insurance clause, which he now is arguing that this is the issue that's going to drive this case and set this case apart from all the other cases. It should be noted that Judge Randa noted this particular argument in a footnote. He did not comment on it either way. He didn't say that it was an ambiguity or it wasn't an ambiguity. He simply noted that the argument was being made. I think what the insurers are trying to do in this case is they are trying to ferret through the policy to look at something, and they're asking the court to look at it in isolation and saying, hey, if you look at this alone, this creates an ambiguity. But what the court has said is, no, you have to look at the policy as a whole. It's the same argument that some of people were making with respect to the limits of liability language, where people were saying, well, wait a minute, my policy says that the maximum the insurance company will pay is a certain amount of dollars. Why doesn't that create an ambiguity when you look at that and then you look at the reducing clause? And the courts have clearly said, and I believe Judge Randa in his district court opinion stated, that you can't just look at this clause on its own. You have to look at this whole UIM section together to figure out what your coverages are. And the fact that the reducing clause language appears before the other insurance clause language doesn't tell the insurer that, well, this reducing clause only applies to anything that comes above it, but not anything that comes below it. It's part of the UIM endorsement, and therefore you need to consider that endorsement as a whole when determining whether the policy is ambiguous, and based upon cases like the Beryl case, the Vorbeck case, and the Van Erden case, this policy is not ambiguous.
Well, tell me this. Doesn't your policy say that the UIM limit of liability provision are the maximum limits that we will pay for damages arising out of a bodily injury? And then you go on to say, when the reducing policy ensures that the limit, in fact, will not ever be paid.
No, Your Honor. I have to disagree with that. Some courts or some insurers have raised the argument with respect to the limit of liability language and then the reducing clause language. And when these two provisions appear in the same UIM portion of the policy, and one court even said the limit of liability section was followed by the reducing clause section, when you read through those provisions, that clearly put the insured on notice.
Don't you think that's an inherent ambiguity?
No, the court has said that is not an inherent ambiguity. I just went through that. In Van Erden, they talked about the fact that that does not create an inherent ambiguity, and in the recent case of Godey versus MSI, I believe that was the case that I had sent to this court just like 2 days ago, they talk about the fact that the maximum limit of liability language does not represent a commitment to pay the maximum limits of liability to the exclusion of other relevant provisions of the policy. What they're saying is you have to look at it as a whole. In addition to responding to the main appeal in this case, Allstate Insurance Company also filed a cross appeal. As Mr. Gendy previously stated, Allstate reduced the limits of UIM liability based upon a payment that was made under one of its two policies. And as discussed in my brief, the district court disagreed that Allstate was entitled to do this based upon a Wisconsin Court of Appeals case, which is called Jansen. And it's Allstate's position that Jansen was incorrectly decided and should not govern in this case. To begin with, the Jansen case relied on another Court of Appeals decision, it was a Wisconsin Supreme Court decision.
Well, you'd have better luck with that argument if you had filed this case in state court.
No, because I think that this court can, because Jansen is a court of appeals.
Sure, but that's case, very persuasive authority for us in diversity cases.
But if you look at Jansen, and you take a close look at it, and you look at the authorities and the reasoning, and you go through it, it's clear that Jansen was incorrectly decided, and there was no petition for review filed in that case, so we don't have any indication from the Wisconsin Supreme Court as to whether they agree with it or they don't agree with it. And some of the problems with the case are, first, that it relies on the employer's case, which is actually a subrogation case. And there are differences between an insurance company that is seeking to assert a right of subrogation versus an insurance company that is relying on a reducing clause that is mandated by statute. In the employer's case, the subrogation clause says that the insurer had the right to recover damages from a responsible third party. And what the carrier had argued was, when you talk about recovering damages from a responsible third party, this means recovery of damages from the wrongdoer who caused the injury or illness. So what they're doing is they're looking at the wrongdoer in this case. Allstate is not a wrongdoer. We're a UIM provider.
Ms. Arrowood, perhaps you could just clear this up for me. The Wisconsin legislature approved the UIM reduction clause by statute. Was that in reaction to some holding of the Wisconsin Supreme Court? Why did this get memorialized in statutory authorization and not just evolve, as I would have thought, and maybe it did, just through the courts as a contract issue?
What happened in 1995 was Wisconsin went through tort reform, and there were a number of UM and UIM cases that were working their way through the court system, and there were decisions coming down as to whether insurance companies could reduce their policy limits, whether they could stack policy limits, and what they did was, in response to some of those decisions where the courts are saying, no insurance company, you cannot do that, they then went ahead and they enacted Section 632.32, which covers such things as stacking, reducing clauses. It also governed...
Was there a conflict among appellate courts in Wisconsin on the appropriateness of UIM? Is that why the legislature felt the need to clear the air, so to speak?
I don't know if it was so much a conflict between the courts as opposed to, I'm searching for the right word, not so much a conflict in the court as opposed to people being unhappy with the decision and urging the legislature to go ahead and enact a statute allowing the insurance companies to do these things.
Well, what was the state of the law prior to 95? I mean, what did the Wisconsin Supreme Court allow as far as UIM clauses prior to that time?
Well, there was a whole series of cases. The problem was before the statute was enacted, there was no minimum threshold of UIM coverage that could be purchased. So insurance companies were selling $25,000 UIM limits, and then we had the problem with Wisconsin's financial responsibility limit is also $25,000. So then we had the issue of, well, if you have a reducing clause and you've only got $25,000 worth of UIM coverage and you can reduce the UIM by the $25,000, there's at least going to be $25,000 in liability coverage there, then this coverage is illusory. And I know that is part of what was going on at that time. And there were also some cases with respect to whether insurance companies could, whether the insurers could stack their policies. Back to the cross appeal. As I stated previously, one of the cases that the court in Janssen relied on was the employer's health case, which was a subrogation case and was not a reducing case like this case. In addition, the court in Janssen also was critical of the insurance policy, which said that it focused on responsible party, reducing by payments received from a responsible party. And they said, well, if you didn't have responsible party, but you had like a liable party, that language is broader and we might have a different result. And what they did when they cited that proposition is they cited to the Skolnick case. It's a case out of Nebraska. But what Skolnick actually said is they did allow for the reduction. And, oh, I'm sorry, my time is up.
Oh, you may conclude, you may conclude your thought.
But in Skolnick, they actually looked to the definition of liable, and they found that it meant responsible. So in essence, the court, there is no difference between liable and responsible. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Irwin. Mr. Gendy?
Thank you very much again. There are multiple things I'd like to address. Allstate still cannot explain to the court how they would ever pay their maximum limits of liability and underinsured motorist coverage.
But hasn't Wisconsin Supreme Court, with respect, basically allowed that phenomenon to exist, that the number in the policy may never be reached? I was trying to think in chambers of some scenario where it might. I guess you could come up with some, but haven't they really allowed that phenomenon to factually to occur?
That's true, but the clause itself is inherently ambiguous, and that is the problem. When you have the limits of liability with the reducing clause, there is that inherent ambiguity. That in and of itself, the courts have now said, is insufficient to make the reducing clause unenforceable. That's why you have to look at the remainder of the policy. Allstate has a declarations page that doesn't direct you to the endorsements. They have a quick guide where it talks about your policy documents, and the quick guide sends you back to the declarations for detailed information on coverages and limits. That is a roadblock, which Mrs. Arrowwood said their policy doesn't have. There's definitely a roadblock in Allstate's policy, and it's at the very beginning of it. They have a Wisconsin amendatory endorsement entitled AU1440-3 that's 15 pages, and you don't find the underinsured motorist clause until the very end of that endorsement, which is at the end of the policy. If a reasonable insured were to somehow find this endorsement at the end of the policy, 15 pages into the endorsement, they then have to get through the broad grant of coverage, which says we will pay up to your limit, the limits of liability clause, which says we will pay the maximum amount. Then they see the reducing clause, which says we are entitled to reduce by other collectible insurance. And then they get to the if there is other insurance clause, which again says we'll pay up to your amount.
Well, but in our case, we do have some discussion, though it's late, in the four page, in the 40s, right? I mean, somewhere in the 40s, they start to discuss UIM.
We get there without any direction. You are already there.
I appreciate your comment on that.
There's a table.
The Eisenhower doesn't even discuss it. I'm trying to take your best case, I think, even though it's an intermediate court, and they don't even discuss that. So, I mean, there's...
Eisenhower does discuss table of contents, index, definitions, all of which all states' policy is deficient in. All states, their policy, I don't know what additional indicia of ambiguity you need, even in the Wisconsin appellate courts, in order to find that policy ambiguous. So, with all due respect to Judge Randa, if we would have had opportunity for oral argument, I wish that I could have pointed those out more appropriately. I don't want to spend a lot of time on Janssen, because again, Allstate totally ignores the statutory interpretation that the Wisconsin appellate court undertook relative to the underinsured motorist clause 632.32.5(i)(1), (2), and (3). And that underinsured motorist statute indicates that you can reduce by legally responsible parties under paragraph 1, workers' compensation under paragraph 2, and disability under paragraph 3. Allstate's brief completely ignores paragraphs 2 and 3, which are workers' comp and disability are quasi-contractual or contractual parties. They would ask the court to broadly construe paragraph 1 only, which talks about legally responsible, to include contractually responsible parties. If the court is to do that, then you would render paragraphs 2 and 3 superfluous. Why would the Wisconsin legislature have indicated other contractually liable parties as reducing if legally responsible encompass all those? So, thank you. I have concluded my thoughts. I appreciate the court's time.
Thank you, Kennedy. Thank you, Fairhood. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed to the